I'm Georgie Crawford. You're listening to the Good Glow podcast. Over the last year, during my treatment for breast cancer, I've realised the importance of self-care. Whether it's a trip to the gym, a checkup with your GP, or even a five-minute meditation, the time has come for us to put ourselves higher on our own to-do list. Over the next few weeks, I'll be talking to people who inspire us and remind us to take better care of ourselves. I'm so thrilled to be joined by a very special friend, radio producer and wellness advocate, Claire Solan.
Hi, Georgie.
Thank you so much for coming in. First of all, I just want to tell people that Claire Solan is the person that gave me Oprah's book, What I Know For Sure, which entirely changed my last year and my relationship with cancer. So after 4 years, I hadn't seen you and you arrived on my doorstep one day and handed me this book, and it's changed my life forever. So thank you from the bottom of my heart.
Wow. The book did exactly the same thing for me. So I knew it just... It was something that came to me when I heard about your cancer fight. And I thought, you know what? I know what she needs.
It was the best gift I've ever been given in my life. Tell us a little bit about yourselves and where you're at now.
So I had a radio and TV career here in Dublin. And in 2015, I decided to move to London. And I've been there ever since, working as a radio producer for Bauer. I worked as a breakfast producer on Magic for a couple of years, and then I moved to Absolute Radio, where I produced Christian O'Connell for a year, and now I'm in charge of the amazing Dave Berry in the mornings.
No better woman.
Yeah, well, it's having done breakfast radio, I guess, myself as a presenter here in Dublin, I do feel very well equipped to produce radio.
And you bring like namaste to his life.
I absolutely do, actually. Yeah, I do. And I really try to in terms of talent management, read a situation. And that comes from communicating with people and connecting with people. So if you're in a room with somebody and you can see there's a level of discomfort, whether it's technically or whether they just need to be fed or watered, or they need oftentimes, as we well know in these in showbiz, it can be just an ego stroke. So a compliment about what Dave is wearing can change the face of his morning.
That's incredible. Over the last few years, now we were together and we were so close, and then you went off to London, and I suppose we'd grown a little bit distant, just life got in the way a little bit, but we always had an amazing connection. But it's only through the last year that I've realized what was actually going on in your life that I had absolutely no idea about. And sometimes I feel like a really bad friend that I didn't know, and I'm sorry for that. But I just wanted you to come on today because I feel like you've been on such a journey and I feel like you need to tell your story.
I do, and please don't blame yourself, because I was acting to an Oscar-winning level for most of my life. I wore a mask, and I have only taken that mask off in the last year or so. I have pleased people and pretended to be Little Miss Sunshine for the majority of my life.
It's so crazy because if anyone had asked me what type of person you were, I would have said always in a good mood, absolutely hilarious, the coolest girl, somebody that everyone just wanted to be around, and on nights out, and everyone was drawn over to you because you were kind of the cool person, you know? So what happened?
So, Jory, that was all by design. I was playing the part of the person I wanted to be, but I wasn't tending to myself. I was a self-loather for a lot of my life. It started in my youth. I was, you know, ginger, and my skin wasn't great in my teens. And so physically, I began to hate myself. And I sowed seeds of self-hatred, which grew into a tree of self-doubt, limiting beliefs, anxiety. And it really destroyed my relationship with myself and actually other people.
So from the outside looking in, it looked like you had it all. You had this dream job. You were the, you know, I think at the time there wasn't that many women in radio, and there still isn't. And you had the breakfast show and everything looked perfect.
That was it. 2010 was the year I got my dream job. I'd always wanted to be on radio in a breakfast show, zoo environment, where there's loads of people in studio. We're talking, you're interviewing, you're chatting to callers. It's fun. And it was when I got that call, I sat on the side of my bed and thought, this is it. My life has begun. 2 years later, I lost my dream job. And at the same time, a relationship I thought would go the distance also ended. And so it was a perfect storm of emotions, which was brewing in my life. And I, you know, did what I always did, stood up, brushed myself off. It's going to be okay. I'm going to be fine. Is everybody else okay? Are my parents okay? Are my friends okay? Does everybody think that I'm fine? Good. And then a couple of months down the line, I just crashed onto the rocks.
And what's it like, you know, because clearly you thought this relationship and this job was your a definition of happiness. Mm-hmm. And then when they're taken away, is that rock bottom for you?
Well, that's it. Because for many, many people, we look outside of ourselves for happiness and joy, whether it's materialism or your career or your love and romance. And so these things defined me. I sat down in front of a life coach after this happened to me and she said, who are you outside of your job? You know, what hobbies do you have? Who are you? And I looked at her like, who am I outside of my job? I'm on the radio. That's who I am. But again, I was playing a role. And I don't blame my employer. That's showbiz, you know? Mm-hmm. You live and die by ratings. I then spent a couple of months trying to come to terms with the fact that this was over. Not really seeing any potential substitutes for a job at this level. The more available you make yourself to other people, unfortunately, you open yourself up to being used a little bit or to being taken for granted. So a couple of months after this all came to an end, I started to feel, I didn't feel suicidal, but I felt very, very depressed. I thought about death. I thought it would be easier. I didn't really know how to deal with the feelings I was feeling, which were worthlessness, loneliness, anxiety. It's huge anxiety, Georgie. I wasn't scared to leave the house, but when I left the house, I was so aware of people looking at me. And when people would look at me, I would think, what are you looking at? What is it? Is there something on my face? Is there something wrong with me? Why are you looking at me? And they were, I can look back now and say, they may even have been looking and thinking, oh, isn't she lovely? Like, mm-hmm. Just looking. There was nothing behind it. But for me, it was negative. So I spoke to a friend who advised I get into counselling, and that changed everything.
So do you think during that time where people... Did people act differently around you because they were kind of, oh God, like Claire's lost her job. She doesn't seem, you know, great. Like, do people change around you when you lose a job like that?
I pulled up the mask again, Georgie, and I was like, no, it's fine. It's going to be okay. I still have work. It's going to be okay. So people didn't know how I was feeling. And that's why I needed to go to therapy. And I remember saying to my mum, I'm going to go to therapy. And she said, you don't need to. I'm here. And I said, Mum, I need to talk about you. I need to talk about my whole life and how I got to this place and why I can't function properly in the face of adversity.
And I think making the first phone call to get into therapy is so hard. It's like the appointment you keep putting off. Like, say, for example, if you're due a smear and you're like, oh, I'll ring tomorrow. And then days turn into weeks, it just turn into months, and you just, life gets in the way.
And I'll say, Georgie, particularly now, procrastination is so easy in the dawn of social media. You can, I mean, I'm sure you feel it. you're sometimes so appalled at how 40 minutes has gone by and all you've done is scrolled through a social platform and looked at other people and you know, wished you were them or admired their lives. And that's it. The outside world can cause a devastating distraction to yourself and your own self-care and self-love.
So was counselling then, did it get worse before it got better? How were you around that time? Or did it start just getting gradually better from this point?
No, I think with everything, and that's really why people don't deep dive into their own lives, they deep dive into other people's lives. It was hellish because I had to go, Anne-Marie was my therapist and we had to go right back.
Right.
We had to go right back to the relationship I had with my father. We had to go back to my upbringing. We had to go back to my inner child, my inner 14-year-old, who overheard someone say, "Oh, what's going on with your pizza-faced ginger mate?" in a school disco.
Wow.
You know, and how that comment or that throwaway comment actually was the basis for my view of myself physically. Even at God, what age would I have been in 2012? Like in my early 30s.
It's crazy. And did many people know then you were going on this, you were starting this journey?
No, I kept it to myself. And even though it was very difficult in the room, and sometimes I would walk in and before I even sat down, I was in tears. But it helped because you leave the room and you feel a sense of relief. You're like, oh God.
I'm in counselling at the moment because I just wanted to check that I was okay, because I felt like I was fine. I felt like I'd accepted the cancer. I was back in work. It had been a year. And then I sat down with Jamie on the couch one night and I said, I don't know if I've just convinced myself that I'm okay. Like, I feel like I'm okay, but maybe I've been lying to myself for so long that I've actually convinced myself. So I wanted to go and just check that I was okay, because I didn't want it to open this, you know, I didn't one day in work want to have a complete meltdown. So I've been going, and then I've realized that have been carrying around a lot of stress inside. And I often wonder, you know, did that contribute to the cancer? And just over stupid stuff. Like, you know, you just hold yourself a certain way or you sit a certain way and you realize, oh my God, I'm so tense on the inside. I'm so stressed all the time. So it's been great to get coping mechanisms, and a huge thing for me in counselling has been realising that I'm okay sometimes, because I'm always looking for, is that a lump? Should I check my breast now? Should I have done a breast check yesterday? Oh my God, what's that pain in my side? Maybe I've ovarian cancer now. When is the cancer going to come back? And it's just constant noise. And then I went to see a counsellor and she said, how do you feel right now? And I said, I actually feel okay. And she goes, enjoy that moment.
Yes.
I was like, whoa. And like you, every time I leave counselling now, I feel like I've done a yoga session.
Yes.
Because everything just kind of relaxes on the inside, doesn't it?
Absolutely. When you have those frank conversations, and I would encourage you, if you are struggling, take it outside of your family and your friends, because as much as they want to help, they're biased. They want you to be better for you and for themselves. You need an independent ear where you can speak to somebody who has no judgment and no knowledge of your life. And I'm telling you, when you have an hour like that every week for a couple of months, you will see a massive difference in your day-to-day life.
So you were going to counselling then, and then what happened?
Well, interestingly enough, I got the job of looking back. That was actually the job I most enjoyed. Even though I loved The Breakfast Show on 98FM, it was everything for me. Very soon afterwards, I did a job called Telephony the After Party, which was a live show.
The best show, and no better woman. Like you, California, obviously, we all know what California was. And then there was this after show on TV3. Mm. And they basically, the cast would come in every week and you'd kind of try to make sense of what had happened in the episode.
That's it. We picked apart the pieces of their mad life in Santa Ponsa. And they were such crack in studio. It was live, which was good for me because...
Live? I never knew that was a live show.
Yeah. But again, it was... good, because I was only used to live. With radio, I was just used to that red light goes on and you have to say something that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so every so often I would have to manage what was going on my couch, which, you know, oftentimes was completely bonkers. But I did my research when I worked on that show. I kind of produced it as well as presenting it, so I knew California back to front, and I loved it, and it went down really well. I know TV3 said to me it did better than they expected it to do. But I have to tell you now, even though it was going great and I looked like I was enjoying myself, I was at rock bottom underneath.
Wow.
And I was doing things like socializing loads, drinking, spending time in smoking areas, talking to people about California, people I didn't even know. But it was all a distraction from actually what was going on inside.
And at this point, did you feel like you were evolving and you were getting kind of coping mechanisms from your counselling? Or did you feel like at this point you were starting to change a little bit?
I felt like, you know what, maybe my career is not over and this is good. But interestingly enough, my TV career did not go anywhere. And I know why now. Because I hated myself. And I hated how I looked, and I didn't think I was good enough to be on TV.
That breaks my heart. You're so beautiful. And it's just shocking for me to hear that. I can't believe that that's how you felt.
There was a couple of, you know, Twitter was big. It wasn't obviously as big as it is now. There was a, you know, as anybody who does anything high profile, you know, you're going to get comments from people which are negative. And I had a few, not many, but I had a few. And unfortunately, like the teenage disco, I took them to heart. I took them like a dart to my chest. And what all it did at the time, rather than helping me to kind of, you know, brush myself off and zip myself up, all it did was it added to the limiting beliefs that were within me. You see, you're not good enough. You see, you're not pretty enough. You see, you shouldn't be doing this. You're an imposter. And so after California, I did some work on Late Lunch Live with Martin King and Lucy Kennedy, which was great fun. I was a reporter. But after that, it dried up.
How would you feel today if you read a comment like that?
I'd laugh. I now produce radio and I see comments like that all the time. Christian O'Connell, who had just under 2 million people listening every week. Dave Berry, who has just over 2 million people listening to him every week. People are angry, you know, angry. And they just, unfortunately, social media just gives people a platform for their anger and their judgment and their own self-hatred. Because I realise now why you take to your keyboard and you write something angry and nasty and send it out there. You do it because you're unhappy inside.
And it's there forever.
Exactly.
I can't understand that. And I spoke to Caroline Foran about this. She was going on the Late Late Show and that was her biggest fear around it, mm-hmm. was what people were going to say. Because, you know, as we know, a lot of people watch the Late Late Show just to tweet mean things. It's shocking to me. I just feel like if people supported each other and put out like positive things, that you just get that back, don't you?
Well, this is so in the last couple of years, I've gone on a journey of self-discovery. And one of the first things, Georgie, I had to do was take ownership for who I am and what I did. So, you know, I very much had hard times in life and I was very down. But on the other side, I was in judgment. I was judging other people. I was bitching. I was gossiping. Somebody said to me at one point, "Oh, Claire, you're great for the gossip." And I was appalled because I thought to myself, me? No, I'm not a gossiper. And I had to sit down and think, are you? Yes, I was. Yes, I was. So for instance, bitching, gossiping, judging other people. Where does that come from? It comes from all of the judgment on yourself from inside. So one day I decided to do an exercise, which is a really interesting exercise if you can do it. On a journey, wherever you are, in town, on public transport, going from A to B. Try and keep track in your mind of how many times you judge people or pass remark about somebody who gets in your way. So as simple as, oh my God, she's walking so slowly in front of me, out of my way. Oh my God, look at him. He's on the train with a big bag on his back. Why wouldn't he take his bag off? Oh my God, look at that coat. Why would she be wearing that coat? This is all going on in your mind constantly. This constant jibber jabber. Mm-hmm. And it's negative. Mm-hmm. And so if you're judging other people, imagine the stuff. So then I went deeper and I thought of me and I catch myself in the mirror and I go, oh God, look at you. What the? Or, oh, I put on a pair of jeans I hadn't worn in a while. Oh, well, they're tighter. And you realize how much damage you're doing to yourself. And then if you decide to be angry about it, maybe to other people on social media.
It's really hard for me to admit. But that's the same thing as has happened to me, and I've realised that. So since I've gone back to work, you know, like you just, the first thing you do is moan, yeah. You know, you know, you're just like, oh, this, oh, that, all the time. And I've caught myself so many times, and I'm really proud of myself that I don't say things out loud anymore, because I'm like, is this true? Like, why am I looking for negatives in people, yes. You know, and I think we're all guilty of it. 100%. We all do it. But it's like, I don't want to be that negative person anymore. And I thought a lot about this, about like, you know, the office gossip, mm-hmm. and how they may go around and they're looking for a reaction from people. Oh, did you hear this? Did you hear that? Did you hear this? So I want to be somebody that person doesn't come to anymore. I don't want to hear that shit.
Yes.
Like, don't project stuff on me that I, one, don't need to hear, mm-hmm. two, it doesn't benefit me in any way, and three, is only kind of giving me a negative vibe inside. So I'm trying to keep it really positive. Now, obviously, we're all going to have a moan from time to time, mm-hmm. but I'm trying to be a more positive person, and I think you can take steps to be that person.
100%. A year ago, I decided, through a recommendation of a friend and a life coach, to go on a meditation retreat to India. Eat, Pray, Love. I was like, this is it. It's my time. I'm living in London. I do a breakfast show. I get up so early in the morning. But my life is on track. But is it on track? Maybe I need to go to the Himalayas to find myself, in inverted commas. And what I found in the Himalayas was a big fat mirror. I met a guru who held up a mirror to me and he said, okay, let me just check with you. So hold on, you work, you get up at 4 a.m. in the morning and you are in a fog of, you know, tiredness and busyness and stress Monday to Friday. And then on a Friday, you go home and you drink alcohol for the whole weekend. Maybe binge drink or, you know, just glasses here and there. And so you're in a fog Friday to Sunday, and then you get up and you do it all over again. And he was like, when do you make big decisions? And I thought, I don't. I've been really lucky to be a rolling stone. I've taken a couple of opportunities and thrown myself out of my comfort zone, and I think that's it. No, I've done my work. But as soon as he said this to me, he then suggested that I give up alcohol for a year. And I can tell you, it's been the most positive step I've taken in my life, because it's given me a chance to remove the crutches and the numbness and the negativity, and has allowed me to sit down in front of a mirror in front of myself and take ownership of who I am.
So when he said that to you, was that day one?
First of all, I was absolutely appalled. I was trying to say to him, I'm a really good drinker. I mean, I drink a lot of water while I drink. And he's this guy sitting in front of me, looking at me going, I live in the Himalayas. I don't even, you know, don't... She doth protest too much. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yes, it was day one because I came back and he said to me, the key is don't wait till January to give this up. Give this up in December. So you will go through Christmas with no alcohol. You'll come out the other side and it'll be easier. So I had to go and change my whole life, my friendship groups, everything that I thought made me a good person. I was the girl who turned up Georgie to every social event. If you needed someone at your birthday party, I would be there. If you needed somebody at you know, the opening of an envelope, guess who's here with a glass of wine in her hand? It was me.
But were you doing that for other people?
Yes. I was people pleasing, but I also felt like it made me a good person. And I thought people will always think Claire Sullivan's, ah, she's great. She'll turn up. I know she'll be there. Oh, she's a great friend.
She's a good friend.
But
yeah.
Then, and I'm sure you've seen this, when you people please to that level, no one can ever meet you there. So you will always walk away feeling the lack. Mm-hmm. You're like, oh my God, I attended her birthday party and I spent a lot of money on that present. And I spent hundreds on the meal and drinking and taxis. And why have I come home feeling so empty? Because I didn't do that for me. I didn't leave when I wanted to leave. I didn't spend a little less on the present. I didn't serve myself in that situation. I just threw myself completely at other people. And when you do that, you're left feeling low and empty.
It's like having respect for yourself, yeah, and love for yourself to, you know, to say no, or to say, you know what, that actually just doesn't suit me.
Georgie, the most powerful sentence you'll ever utter is, no, sorry, that doesn't suit me. And no, because, just no, sorry, I won't make it.
And not to have to make up a lie, to just say, I did it last Saturday night. All the girls were going out and I haven't seen them in a long time. Not like I see my best mates, but, you know, my girls group, you know, we all try to get together every so often. I haven't been to one of those nights in a long time. And one of the girls texted me and said, oh, are you coming in? We're sitting, blah, blah, blah. See you at 8. And I just said, look, I just can't. I'm too tired. I've had a busy week. I've got a lot on next week. And she was like, okay, cool. Oh, so sorry to miss you, but sure, we'll catch you next time. Instead of saying, I can't get a babysitter, you know, oh, I've got a big lunch tomorrow. Mm-hmm. I just told the truth.
Yeah. And actually, listening to you say that there, we don't give people enough credit. We think, oh, they're going to be, you know, and it's a real Irish thing in the best possible sense. Go on, go on, go on. You'll stay. You will come. Come on. One more drink. But actually, if you're firm and you say, no, sorry, I'm too tired. I won't make it. People will say, okay, I respect your space and who you are and what you're doing. Fine.
Do you think that moving to London allowed you to be your true self? So basically, after I got cancer, I just didn't care what people thought as much anymore. So that kind of huge, you know, earthquake in the middle of my life gave me the confidence to change. So I started running, which I never would have done before because I would have been scarlet. Isn't it so Irish? So I didn't want to run down the road because if someone saw me, they'd be like, Georgie. And we're all guilty of doing it. I saw you running down the road. What are you like? You're not that type of person. Since when did you start running? You don't run. You don't exercise. You're not that type of person. And we all kind of put each other into categories of the type of person we are.
Yes.
So I wasn't a big exerciser. But now I'm like, I actually don't care that I wasn't like that in my 20s. Who says that I can't be a big fitness person now?
Yeah.
Just because people expect you to be a certain way doesn't mean that you have to live out their, you know, vision for you. But do you think that moving to London, you know, where people didn't know you, that you could kind of be your true self and no one was judging you?
Spot on, George. I moved to London for all the reasons that people leave London. For the big city, for the anonymity, for the fact that nobody connects with you or looks at you or cares who you are. that's the reason I moved there, because I needed to get lost in a big city and find myself.
What was the first night like when you got there?
I left, so spectacularly threw in the towel here, left with a bank loan, no job and nowhere to live.
Oh my God.
So I got, one of the memories I keep is arriving into London and getting to Clapham Junction, which used to be Europe's biggest, busiest train station. I think it's now the UK's busiest train station. And I got onto the platform and I needed to get to Putney, where my friend Kathy was giving me a couch for a couple of months. And I got to the platform and it was match day. So everybody was heading to Twickenham. England were playing the rugby. I left Ireland on the 14th of February 2015, totally intentionally, because that was my love letter to myself.
That's amazing.
And I'll always remember it. So it was Valentine's Day and I thought, this is me off to my new city. I'm going to fall in love with a new city. Got to the platform, George, with like my possessions in two large suitcases and hundreds of England fans in rugby jerseys. And obviously every time a train came, they would all get on. There was no space for somebody with two big suitcases. So I think I probably saw, and these weren't tube trains, these were overground trains. I'd say I saw five trains go by, and I rang Kathy and I went, Kathy, nobody cares. Nobody's helping me. What am I going to do? And she goes, oh, maybe just get a taxi. You're not too far from us. So I went out and got into a black cab and got to Kathy's place. I was really, really happy in London for the first couple of months. I had money in my back pocket. What I didn't do was go out and explore, because the weight of kind of trying to find a job was weighing heavily on my shoulders. I was nearly 3 months there and I'm starting to panic a little bit, because I thought maybe I'll go and work in TV, but radio is my jam. I get this medium. I know it. I love it. I just didn't think I'd get an opportunity in it. And actually, the lovely Liam Thompson got in touch with me and said, I hear you're in London. I'm looking for a producer in Magic Radio. Why don't you apply?
It's good to know people.
It's one of my things. It's now on my CV. I am a networker. I establish relationships and connections with people like you and I. We mightn't see each other every day, but I know that I put enough time and energy into the connections and communications that we have, that I can come back to you and back and back and back. And that's how I live my life now.
When you knocked on my door after, well, it must have been 4 or 5 years, was it? I was blown away by you, because I was like, whoa, oh my God. Like, Claire has changed so much in such an amazing way. You were so, I think it's a kind of ballsy thing to do, knock on someone's door who's been diagnosed with cancer, because I found that a lot of people avoided me, and not in a mean way, in a way that, oh Jesus, did you hear what happened to Georgie? Oh, I better leave her.
Yes.
And I don't judge anyone for that, because I wonder what I would do in that situation. And I think we're all so young that none of our friends have gotten cancer before, so no one really knows what to do. So I was blown away that you came to my door, because you hadn't seen me in 4 years. I mean, I think I was wearing a wig at the time. And I was probably at one of my, you know, the lowest point. And I just really needed it. And I appreciated it so much. And I just do think it's important for people when someone is sick, even if you haven't seen them, to get in touch. And you got in touch with me. Tracy Clifford, who I'd worked with in Spin, got in touch with me in a big way. And I suppose people that you connected with in the past that you're like, oh, we've all moved on now, but why can't you still be there for someone? And I hope that I can do that for someone going forward. And I feel like I wasn't there for you when you were going through all that. And I still think about it all the time. And I didn't go to your going away party when you were going away. And I thought about that for like 2 years afterwards. And I said it to our friend Brendan. I kept saying, I still to this day can't believe I didn't go to Solon's going away party. And I'm going to ring her and I'm going to explain why I didn't. And Brendan kept saying, do, like, go on. Like, why do you keep saying it to me all the time? Just do it. And I never did it because, you know, the way sometimes you just don't want to face things.
Yes.
So then when you came, I was like, oh, thank God that you did that. And we got to reconnect again.
I was in a place myself where I was stripping everything back. So my phone had stopped ringing. I was deciding that I needed to discover who I was and discover my own motivations and my own joy. And so when I heard about what happened to you, I was devastated for you. Like, just couldn't believe, as you say, this happened to you, and you had Pia, and life was just taking off. And my first instinct was to get in touch because I'd been listening to amazing podcasts like Oprah's Super Soul Conversations. I'd been reading loads of self-help stuff. And the connection between people is the most fundamental thing we have. Breaking through the barriers. Like you say, people think, oh God, I won't bother her. Oh no, I won't. I better not. No, I better not. Don't send a text. Don't like a tweet. Make a phone call or turn up for that person. Show up for them. Because actually by doing that, you're also showing up for yourself.
And for me, that is just so hitting the nail on the head there. Like, it's in times of crisis, we need action. And even though you may feel like you're completely stepping over the line by knocking on someone's door or dropping a shepherd's pie on their doorstep, it will always be appreciated.
Always.
And if you text someone and they don't write back, text them again.
Yeah.
Because sometimes on a Monday, I just couldn't face the world. And one of my best friends, Rebecca, she's so amazing. She would text me 5 days in a row.
Really?
And sometimes I wouldn't write back to her. Well, most of the time. I'm sorry, Rebecca. But at that time, I was just in survival mode.
Yeah.
Like, I couldn't do anything. And she just would text me still every day. Hi, Georgie. How are you? Da, 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 da. Like the same thing over and over again. I was like, God, that's a true friend, isn't it? What was it like? I've never asked anyone this before. What's it like when one of your friends gets cancer? Because it's never happened to me.
It's devastating.
Yeah.
It really is. Because you think it, everything that you believe to be true is not anymore.
Because you just never think that it's going to happen.
No. How could this possibly happen? And for you and me, because you and I spent Saturdays together and used to confide in each other about love and life and what was going on, I knew where you were at. I knew that life was just taking off. I'd seen Pia on social media. I know Jamie, obviously, from working with him. This was perfect. Life was perfect. You know, and how could this be? And actually, I think as women, we're amazing empathizers, and it's definitely a strength of mine. And the reason I showed up that day was because I thought, what if this was me? What would I need?
Yeah. It's just, sometimes I think I'm still, when I look at my life from the outside in, like, my heart is broken, you know, that this happened to me, but it's given me such a purpose, and I'm so complete now. It sounds so weird, but I love myself like I've never loved myself before, and just have this respect for myself now that I never had before, in terms of eating well, living well, realizing what's important. And I said in an interview with Ray Darcy, actually on Radio 1, and he was chatting to me about cancer, and I said it's given me such perspective at such a young age that people maybe go through their entire lives and never get. And I feel so lucky to have realised all these things without trying to sound like Kylie Jenner. Realising so much stuff at such a young age is actually such a gift. And please God that I can stay healthy and just continue, you know, to live my life fully. Like every day I worry about the cancer coming back, and you know, you kind of look at your life from the outside in like, oh, she's so young. Oh, that, did you hear about Georgie? She, all these things go through your head all the time. And you know, when you have a baby, like it's so hard to imagine maybe what would life be like for her if I wasn't around. But what I can give to her now is something that I never would have been able to give to her before. Hopefully as she grows older, she will love herself. She'll be so aware of her health. She'll, you know, eat her five a day. You know, just little things like that. She'll exercise. And that makes me so happy that she's been given all of that now, which she may not have had it before, you know, if I didn't get cancer.
The day that I went up to your beautiful home and sat down, the energy there is just amazing. Your baby girl is so happy, and your husband is so incredibly supportive. When you left the room, he and I had a really frank conversation about how you were. And he told me, you know, about the darkness. And I thought, as I left, everything's going to be okay because he gets it. Mm. And you get it.
Yeah. And the, you gave me Oprah's book that day, and then I had chemo, like I was in the middle of chemo, and I brought it to every chemo session, and everywhere I went for 6 months afterwards it was always in my handbag. It's because, if you know, if I was waiting for a doctor's appointment or I had 5 minutes to myself, I'd always just open it and mm-hmm. read parts of it. But she talked about accepting and acknowledging things that happen in your life, and I was like, God, if I'm going to move on from this, I need to accept it. And my brother was really good, and my mom at talking to me about accepting it and, you know, checking in with myself and all those things. But that book, I don't, sometimes I'm like, do I sound really dramatic talking about how much I love this book? And people text me all the time or get in touch with me, and they're like, a friend of mine is going through a really tough time, what should I do? A friend of mine has cancer, you know, is there anything that could help their chemo journey? And I'm like, Oprah's book, what I know for sure, everyone should read it. I mean, and just in terms of how Oprah speaks about life isn't perfect and all these aha moments and mm-hmm. how everything's in your subconscious mind and how we actually know all these things, but sometimes it takes someone to say them out loud for us to realize it. And that's how I feel about self-care now. It's yes. like I always knew that this is what I should be doing, but it's like I was so busy, or maybe my head was turned in the opposite way. But since I've kind of discovered self-care, I feel so much better on the inside.
That's it. And the things I do now, George, to make myself happy are doing nice things or saying nice things to people. So instead of me going, look at that coat she's wearing, what's she wearing that for? I'll actually send an email to somebody and say, Lisa, it's been so long. How are you? You know, we must meet up. I hope everything's well. I saw the kids on social media. They look great. Send it off. Gone. Gratitude diary. Really, really recommend this. Three things that you're grateful for. I know Oprah does it and keeps it by her bed. Three things that you're grateful for and maybe how the day could have been better. And if you build up a habit, like you said when you were speaking to Darren about drinking water, if you build up that habit, you'll start to radiate mm-hmm. kindness and good energy. And when you put out good energy, what comes back? Amazing energy from people.
And what do you think about now, like the first thing you think of when you wake up in the morning? Because before I got cancer, it was like, oh my God, I'm so tired. And now I wake up and I go, oh God, I'm like, it's not a negative feeling. I am delighted to have the energy to jump out of bed.
There it is. I mentioned Oprah's What I Know For Sure. And the next book I'd like to recommend to you, if you haven't read it already, is Marianne Williamson, Return to Love. Because it's all about love. Everything is the basis of life. And so I wake up every morning and my mantra is, I place my life in the loving hands of God. Hashtag surrender. I surrender to this day. I want it to be good. I'm going to put my best foot forward, but I surrender to whatever is to come today. And so therefore, all of the anxieties and the worries that you may build up are just calmed, and you can just take your day as it comes.
What are your healthy habits? When you got into my car this morning, you look unbelievable. Like, this podcast is called The Good Glow. And you are absolutely glowing. But you glow from, you know, the inside. Yeah. And I think that's so important, is to glow from the inside. Because I think if you're glowing on the inside, you will glow on the outside. Mm. So you look amazing. You're clearly happy.
Yeah. The year off alcohol was good for me, certainly physically. I'm sure I look a little bit better. I don't feel massively different. However, I know what it did was free up time for me to find out who I am. So without going out on Friday, Saturday nights or Thursdays or whenever the drinks were available, I now sit in and I actually have figured out that I love to sing. I've started seeing an
act- Yes!
I've started seeing an acting coach.
Really?
I love to cook. I'm a great cook. Who knew? I do yoga. I meditate. I've discovered habits and hobbies, which I just thought, you know, there's a thing of the past. You know, I was Fagin and Oliver, but that was in transition year. I mean, it was a one-off. No, actually, I've been acting for my whole life, pretending to be happy. But now I've reached true happiness, I can go back to the acting and really enjoy it.
Oh, I love this. Yeah. So instead of, I suppose, spending a weekend in London, drinking, going out, socialising, you're like doing really positive things. Because you wake up, obviously, and you've no hangover. So you're waking up at 8 o'clock and you've a full day of freedom in front of you.
Exactly, George. And that's for me. You mentioned exercise earlier on. Huge for me in terms of mental health and motivation. Those endorphins, as soon as you get out, and even if you're only running a mile or two a day or a couple of times a week, you come back feeling like a superstar. Mm. And that propels you then to do the things that you maybe ignore. And the interesting thing for me is I've discovered my hobbies and what makes me happy in my spare time now, minus alcohol. But what I'm getting now is I'm getting to the stuff that I've really ignored. You know, the life admin, like the pension.
Yes.
Or the life assurance and all of that stuff that you feel is just too huge to deal with. I can now sit down on a Saturday and say, pick up the pension, read the page, find out what needs to be done, make the call.
Wow. It's like you're living with like a clearer conscience. Like, mm-hmm. You're just, you know, living your life fully.
Exactly. I'm open. I'm woke. I've woken up. I'm living my life my way.
That's huge achievement.
It's a massive achievement.
In how many years?
I guess the journey of self-discovery is only 2 years in the making, but my trigger, my worst year of my life was 2012. Mm. So I guess it's taken me 6 years to get here.
And it's like the same with Caroline Foran, the same with me. Sometimes the worst thing to happen to you in life turns out to be one of the best.
Everybody needs a trigger to change. whether you want to take yourself down this path or whether you're happy enough where you are, there needs to be a moment where you make a decision to do something different. And that's generally in a time of crisis.
So 2019, what's the plan? Because I feel like, you know, like I was saying to you earlier, like self-care, it's like a secret people were in on. But I think in 2019, people are going to start spreading the message. Wellness is going to be a huge thing. And I think you have a voice and you need to use it.
2017, I was reading this in good old Grazia magazine the other day. 2017 was when Time's Up and Me Too showed up. 2018 was action, repeal. This stuff started to happen. 2019 is when we spread and get everybody involved. Like, we encourage people and empower people to make themselves happy, to make a change. If you're existing, you deserve to live.
And you have every right. You have every right to live as the next person. Before I got sick, I think I was quite an apologetic type of person. Like, oh, sorry, excuse me. Oh, oh my God. Oh, no, sorry. Oh, maybe I won't do that. That person might think, who the hell does she think she is doing that? And then when I got sick, I was like, hold on a minute. I have every right to be here.
Yes.
Just as much as the next person.
Ownership and accountability for yourself is one of the most fulfilling things you can ever do. Like you say, no, I'm going to stand here. I'm not going to apologise. I'm not going to show up to your birthday party. I'm going to do exactly what I want to do. Stay in me PJs.
Where can people find you online?
I'm at Claire Solon on Twitter and at Claire Solon on Instagram. I would encourage anybody to pick up Marianne Williamson or Oprah Winfrey and listen to Oprah's podcasts, because she talks about everything, so you can choose the one that's right for you. She has Super Soul Conversations with some of the biggest success stories in the world in terms of wellness and happiness. But the interesting thing, as we've said, is many of these people have had a really difficult journey to there, so you'll find the one that's right for you. For me, for 2019, I have got a new job. So I'm going to be working for BBC Radio 2, producing
my God,
Trevor Nelson.
Claire Solon, you absolute legend. I cannot believe that you've got this amazing job.
It's a job I would only ever have dreamed of, and probably 4 or 5 years ago would not have been capable of. But because I stopped in my tracks and I changed my life, I'm now going to live the life I've always wanted.
I think you're a huge inspiration, and I think what you say is so true. You need to work on yourself in order for your dreams to come true. Mm-hmm. And 10 years ago, you wouldn't have gotten that job. No. Because you went off and you worked on yourself and you've become the best version of yourself and you're putting out these amazing positive vibes, you've gotten your dream job and it's all worked out. And when you were at rock bottom all those years ago, who knew that this is where you'd be?
This is it. But there's a path, there is a plan, and believe that if you're at rock bottom and you're suffering, there is a plan. This is all part of your life, your tapestry. This is your story, and where you go next is what's crucial. So make the decision to accept where you are, but decide where you want to be and go there.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thanks for listening to the Good Glow podcast. Please subscribe so you can be the first to hear about new episodes. And if you enjoyed the podcast, please leave a review. You can check out thegoodglow.ie for more on my story and follow me on Instagram @GeorgieJCrawford.